Peter B. Collins News and Comment. It's Thursday, June 21st. Solstice Day, the longest day of the year. Oh yeah, 2018, in case you're just coming back from outer space or inner space. Well, Trump has thrown more gasoline on the fire that he ignited, with confusion, chaos, and conflict reigning in Washington, D.C. And let's try to give you a status report here with the most significant issue first. Now, Trump maintains that yesterday when he signed that executive order that will no longer split up families, they'll be locked up together. Well, he said that he's maintaining the zero-tolerance policy. That's the official line from the White House. But out in the field, the U.S. Border Patrol, according to the Washington Post, will no longer refer migrant parents who cross into the U.S. illegally with children to federal courthouses to face criminal charges. Now, that appears to me to be a substantial change from zero tolerance. The Post story continues, the about-face comes just one day after Trump signed his executive order, ending the administration's widely denounced practice of separating parents and children apprehended for illegally crossing the Mexican border. Trump's order said the government would maintain that zero-tolerance policy toward those who break the law, but the senior U.S. official, asked to explain how the government would change enforcement practices, said border agents were instructed Wednesday evening to stop sending parents to federal courthouses with children for prosecution. Quote, "We're suspending prosecutions of adults who are members of family units until ICE can accelerate resource capability to allow us to maintain custody." Now, what I infer here is at least a temporary suspension of the zero-tolerance policy without, of course, letting the deplorables know about it. The article continues, because ICE lacks the detention capacity to increase the number of families it holds in detention, the official acknowledged that many migrant parents and children will likely be released from custody while they await court hearings. And this is what Trump has said he's just virulently opposed to, catch and release. One more quote, "The decision to cease prosecutions of parents with children was made by the Homeland Security Department for logistical purposes, because the official said it would not be feasible to bring children to federal courtrooms while their parents go before a judge." Not only that, we don't apparently have much in the way of facilities to hold families incarcerated together. There doesn't appear to be a budget for it. And so there are a lot of problems with Trump's executive order. We'll drill down on that in a moment. But on Capitol Hill today, the Republicans tried to ram through a hardline conservative immigration bill written by Bob Goodlatte. He's a knuckle-dragging conservative Republican. He called it the Securing America's Future Act. It had the harshest approach to Dreamers, giving them a path to citizenship after 11 years. And it would fix the child separation crisis by allowing children to be detained indefinitely in immigration facilities along with their parents. And it had other nasty elements, a deep cut in legal immigration rates, and other matters. But it don't matter no more, because the bill failed. Only got 193 votes, needed 218 to clear the House. Not a single Democrat voted for it. And now attention turns to what the Republicans dubbed the compromise bill. And in the Republican vernacular, compromise means that the other side capitulates to all of their demands. And so that vote has been postponed at least until tomorrow, because the Republicans know they don't have the votes to pass it. Nancy Pelosi is holding firm, saying that, and we'll get to a quote from her in a moment. But Trump continues to snipe at Capitol Hill from the Oval Office or wherever he manages his Twitter feed, because he's been throwing out the kind of comments that will cause wobbly Republicans to say, you know what, it's better to take no action and have my constituents believe that I'm against all immigration and against all immigrants, than to vote for a bill that doesn't pass. And so Trump stoked that by saying, hey, what's the purpose of the House doing a good immigration bill when you need 9 votes by Democrats in the Senate and the Dems are only looking to obstruct? Then he says that Republicans have to get rid of the filibuster rule in the Senate that requires 60 votes to end debate. And that gives the minority Democrats relevance and leverage in this process. So Trump is making sure, essentially, that nothing happens. And I have to say that based on the draconian moves by Republicans and even the elements of the so-called compromise bill, the Democrats don't want to see anything pass either, because it's not going to favor their interests and it's not going to help the critical groups who've been held hostage, the children separated at the border, and the Dreamers who are left adrift with no action predicted. So this is a huge mess, and the some 2,300 children who've already been detained, separated from their parents, how will they be reunited? Well, Kirstjen Nielsen, the woman who appears to be absolutely cold-blooded, she runs the Department of Homeland Security these days, well, she told CNN that we have a plan to reunite the families. It's a combination of Homeland Security, the Justice Department, and Health and Human Services, reuniting as quickly as we can. But once again, Washington is at odds with the reality on the front lines. Because over at HHS, well, it's still very early, and we are awaiting further guidance on the matter. So if there's a plan, one of the key parties to it, the Health and Human Services Department, has not been briefed so far. Now, the separated kids are being held in more than 100 facilities in 17 states. We know there's some here in California. Some have been flown to New York. And while the zero tolerance policy remains in place according to Trump's executive order, it does urge DHS to keep families detained together if there is available space, and that is a big, big if. Then we get to the executive order's reliance, or a presumption, that federal courts will respond to the president and modify the 1997 settlement deal that puts a limit of 20 days on the lockup of minors in immigration custody. He just assumes that the courts will relax that, and that appears to be a pipe dream on Trump's part. Meanwhile, after posing as compassionate and caring about these kids, Trump flew off to Duluth, Minnesota last night to hold one of those mob rallies with the MAGA crowd, and he engaged in this form of projection. He told the crowd that the uproar over his administration's policy is a distraction launched by Democrats to keep you from focusing on the FBI's Inspector General, it's actually the Justice Department's Inspector General report on the Clinton email investigation. And Trump, the master of distraction, is using that projection to say, yeah, you know, I'm not trying to distract you from anything. We're just upholding the law and keeping those vile immigrants from crossing our border. Right now, they're building up immigration, Trump said. They don't want to show what's happening in Congress where this scam, the Clinton investigation, has been revealed. Oh, and then he went on to say, this is choice stuff. And it shows how classless and insecure Trump is. He asked the crowd to their cheers and roars and laughter. He talked about the Washington elite. He said, why are they elite? I have a much better apartment than they do. I'm smarter than they are. I'm richer than they are. I became president and they didn't. And I'm representing the greatest, smartest, most loyal, best people on earth, the deplorables. Now, what kind of person who actually believes they're smart and rich needs to try to persuade people that they are actually smart and rich? He usually says, I'm like smart. But this time he, like, forgot the like part, it seems. Then he's tweeting out these kind of demands to Congress, further injecting chaos into an already unruly process. A tweet today, we shouldn't be hiring judges by the thousands, as our ridiculous immigration laws demand. We should be changing our laws, building the wall, hire border agents and ICE, and not let people come into our country based on the legal phrase they're told to say as their password. That's the asylum seeker. Now, the idea that we should live with a backlog of immigration cases and use that as a way to deter people from trying to enter our country, the idea that we should change the laws so that people can't go to court and jam up the courtrooms and require more immigration judges, then, of course, he wants his wall. We all know how nonsensical that is. And we've hired more border agents than ever. And the actual traffic at the border has declined to the point where the border guys and gals are kind of patrolling each other. And then we got all those National Guard troops who aren't actually permitted to control the border, but that they're down there fixing cars and flying drones and who knows what else. And to top it off today, Trump repeatedly attacked the extremist open border Democrats who are to blame for all of the immigration problems as he sees them. And then he invited the open border extremist Democrats to come on over to the White House. Let's try to work out a deal. Anytime they want. After the cabinet meeting would be good, he said. And here's an example of a Republican congressman who represents a Texas border district who opposes even the so-called compromise that the Republicans hope they can squeeze through the House. Will Hurd said he'll vote no on that so-called compromise bill. He's considered vulnerable in the midterm elections. He says that while he's long advocated for border security and a fix for young immigrants, the Dreamers, I cannot support a bill that fails to effectively address family separations at the border, establishes a long and winding road for DACA recipients at the expense of existing visa programs, and doubles down on an expensive and ineffective 4th-century border security tool that takes private property away from hundreds of Texans, he said, referring to the wall that Mexico will never pay for. And here's a tweet from Nancy Pelosi. House Republicans are intent on labeling their anti-family immigration legislation as a compromise. It must be a compromise with the devil, because it's not a compromise with Democrats. And she said Republicans should abandon these bills immediately, saying that Trump's executive order was a halfway measure that will not solve the immigration crisis. And Pelosi, quote, he thinks that the way you protect the border is to put children in cages. And she described the actions on immigration as outside the circle of civilized behavior. And I agree with Pelosi on this. I do think the Democrats are ultimately going to lose to the dark forces that Trump dog whistles to on a regular basis. This was a surprise to me. Has Melania gone rogue? She showed up in Texas today, and she went on a tour of one of these kiddie jails, a border facility holding children separated from their families. She went to the New Hope Children's Center operated by Lutheran Social Services. There are about 55 children there, 27 boys, 28 girls, aged 12 to 17, and six of them were separated from their families. Most are from Guatemala. And Melania showed humanity here. First of all, I rarely comment on her fashion choices, but she showed up without any bling, wearing a simple white blouse, some white pants, and some sneakers. No heels, no fashion statement. And she proceeded to act like a human being. She asked the questions that you and I would ask if we were in that facility, and unlike reporters who have been shepherded through some of these on guided tours, the First Lady was actually permitted to interact with some of the young people to talk to them. So, I can't explain it, but there it is. And these detention centers are a huge source of profiteering, misery profiteering. You may have heard of Southwest Key Programs. They operate that former Walmart store, Casa Padre. They've gotten at least almost $1 billion in federal contracts since 2015, and their CEO gave himself a raise last year from about $750,000 to $1.5 million. But that group's not alone. There's a small network of private prison companies operating family detention centers in Texas and Pennsylvania. Then there's a global network of nonprofit groups, BCFS, that's gotten under $200 million, $179 million, in federal contracts since 2015. And get this, several large defense contractors and security firms are also building a presence in the system, including good old General Dynamics, the global aerospace and defense company. Isn't that pretty? And here's another Texas-based war profiteer that won a victory in a federal appeals court yesterday, KBR, formerly a division of Halliburton. Well, they ran the burn pits for the military. Joe Hickman's been on our show several times. He was here just a couple of weeks ago. It was last week, in fact, when he updated us on congressional action to address the illnesses that have been inflicted on those who were downwind from the burn pits. And this is a real setback, because a three-judge panel agreed with a federal judge in Maryland who threw out the lawsuit against KBR last year, saying that they were just following orders from the military and that the military is above the reach of the courts. And so Congress is left to take action on this, and it leaves the burn pits victims dangling like so many other interest groups who deserve attention and relief. Every day I pause for a second to thank the people who support my work here at the Peter B. Collins Podcast with your subscriptions. People like Brian Mazzi, Benny Alto, and I turn the page here, Arlene Montemarano and Aiden McAleer. They each kick in $5 or $10 a month to support my work, and it's great validation and it helps defray the costs here. I hope you'll join in. All you got to do is drop by peterbcollins.com. There's a menu tab. Pull it down. Click on Become a Subscriber. It takes you to the sign-up page where you've got options to choose from, something that'll fit your budget. And if you prefer to avoid PayPal, I understand, you can direct your communications and your contributions to my post office box, 150-660, San Rafael, California, 94915. That's box 150-660, San Rafael, California, 94915. And my subscribers get first in on our in-depth interviews. And today, subscribers get to listen first to our latest in-depth interview with investigative reporter Greg Palast. And Palast follows the election hijinks, the Republican-led voter suppression schemes that cost Hillary Clinton the 2016 election. And in our new interview today, Palast updates us on a court loss by Kris Kobach, the Secretary of State of Kansas, running for governor there, the architect of the voter suppression schemes. And he lost on a law that he got passed in Kansas, which required voters to provide proof of citizenship before they would be registered to vote. Greg Palast has a lot of good comments about Kobach and about the recent setback at the Supreme Court, which ruled that Ohio's voter caging scheme is constitutional. Here's an excerpt from my conversation with Greg Palast.
Now, believe it or not, the law is super duper clear on this. And even the Supreme Court last week agreed. The law says you can't lose your vote because you don't vote. Now, you can't say, well, you didn't vote, which is your right as an American to vote or not vote. And then you decide to vote. You can't say, well, you missed an election. Ha ha. This is highly misunderstood by the press, who said that the Supreme Court authorized removing people because they failed to vote. Not so. Failure to vote by itself is not a reason to lose your vote. You have to get and not return the Kobach postcard in Ohio using Kobach's two things. If you don't vote, they didn't say you lose your vote. They say that's evidence, ready, that you have moved out of the state or moved to a different county.
Right.
Not voting is evidence you've moved. Now, you know what's usually evidence you've moved? A postal change of address card, which the state has 100% access to. They're given computer tapes, by the way, by the state. The state tax records. Believe me, I can tell you because I worked as a consultant to the governor of Ohio in days when they weren't trogs. And certainly the taxing authorities of Ohio sure as heck knew that I where I was. And so there's ways that you can find out for 100% sure if someone has moved or not. But instead, they send people a postcard. It doesn't say, have you moved? It says, verify your address, that Kobach postcard. Your name's on the front, your address is on the front. You're supposed to repeat them on the back and send them back. Crazy. But the court said, that's okay. You can remove people if they don't show to vote. And that triggers you sending the Kobach card and you don't send it back. Well, that's good.
And I invite subscribers to listen to the full interview with Greg Palast. In addition to the election issues, we do get some cogent comments from Greg about the immigration crisis and the effective dog whistling of Republicans like Trump and Kris Kobach. Well, it's been a couple of weeks since the grand gesture in Singapore, the big summit between Trump and Kim. And so far, we've seen no follow-up action. South Korea is now urging the North to present a plan with concrete steps toward denuclearization because they haven't seen anything except, well, Kim went to China this week, but there has been no movement. And even our mad dog Secretary of Defense, James Mattis, said he's unaware of any steps taken by North Korea toward dismantling its nuclear weapons program since the Singapore summit, and he doesn't expect anything in the immediate future. Now, Mike Pompeo, the latest Secretary of State, said that he and John Bolton had been tasked by the president with the follow-up talks. After the conference broke up in Singapore, Pompeo said, I will be the person who takes the role of driving this forward, and it should happen within a week or so. But nothing that we know of has occurred. And Gareth Porter has a great analytical piece at Consortium News today, describing the elite coalition that is against the Trump-Kim agreement and apparently prefers the standoff status quo. And he names Democratic partisans, the corporate media, and those loyal to the deep state, the national security state. And he says it appears they would rather keep the 70-year-old confrontation alive, keep tens of thousands of American troops in South Korea, keep the war games going. And I think you'll find it an interesting piece. I've linked to the article in the show file for today's podcast. The Michael Cohen investigation, which is not part of the Mueller investigation, try to keep those distinct, is now embroiling the top brass at the National Enquirer. They have been served with subpoenas demanding information and probable testimony regarding the way the parent company of the Enquirer, American Media, paid the former Playboy playmate Karen McDougal $150,000 to buy her story and then didn't permit her to talk about it or publish it. That's called, called catch and kill. So we'll see where the investigators go with that lead. In Israel, Sarah Netanyahu, the wife of Benjamin Netanyahu, was indicted today on charges that she defrauded the Israeli government of about $100,000 in improper expenses. This all relates to the official residence of the prime minister and Sarah Netanyahu's efforts to charge the government for personal expenses. Mike Bloomberg, the billionaire former mayor of New York, he was once a Democrat, then he became a Republican, now he's an independent, and he is so upset with the direction of the country that he is going to bet $80 million on electing Democrats this year, mostly to Congress, mostly to the House of Representatives. And that sounds nice until you dig in a little deeper, and it turns out that Mike Bloomberg is fascinated by and attracted to the crop of intelligence and military veterans who we've been exposing as the dominant group in the people who've been recruited by Democrats to run for the House this year. And longtime Democratic fixer Howard Wolfson, who is a former executive director of the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, will be profiting handsomely as he will direct the spending of Mike Bloomberg's $80 million. Yesterday, we mentioned the battle over a net neutrality law here in California and how a member of the Assembly from Los Angeles, Democrat Miguel Santiago, is busting into the process. He chairs a committee that has essentially just discarded the two bills that were written that combined would make a net neutrality law in California even more effective, more invulnerable than the FCC rules were. But that was discarded, and Santiago got his committee to vote 8-0 to discard the bills that have already been written and write a much weaker version of net neutrality. It is a real problem. And, of course, Santiago has been generously supported by AT&T and Charter Communications, which would benefit from no net neutrality or a toothless bill, and it appears that that is what he is dedicated to producing.
A convertible is parked outside, but
Mr. President, this morning's Dallas Morning News has a full-page ad condemning you. It's designed to look like a funeral notice.
Hand it over. Well, Jackie, this could be it. But if someone wants to shoot me from a window with a rifle today, nobody can stop it. So why worry about it?
I told you I would go anywhere with you, Jack. And I meant it. So far, the people here have shown nothing but love for you.
I'll still be glad when today's over and we're on the plane back to Washington.
This is a taste of the new release from John Dist, a collection of songs reflecting on the life and assassination of John F. Kennedy. It's called American University.
Hardwired motor.
John Dist is a talented singer and songwriter, a mean guitarist. His lyrics on this CD, I think, are fascinating. And he joins me for a quick conversation today here on the Peter B. Collins podcast. John, congratulations on your new release.
Thank you very much.
How long have you been focused on the Kennedy assassination?
Well, I wanted to tell you it's all your fault. I never really thought too much about it. I saw the movie JFK when it came out, and I was pretty blown away by Gary Oldman's performance, and he had played Sid Vicious, so to me he was kind of a rock and roll guy to play Lee. So it sort of always tied in with rock and roll to me in that way. But I did the last album on about 9/11 and the aftermath of 9/11,
sure.
So it sort of made sense.
Well,
to go back.
These are two enduring cover-ups, and as I've mentioned to you, I started covering the Kennedy assassination, the cover-up by the Warren Commission, various exposés from Gerald Posner to many other authors over the years, and I still consider it to be a successful cover-up. I have my own theories about the CIA's responsibility for the plot to kill Kennedy, but they successfully created so many subplots, the New Orleans, the Lee Harvey Oswald's trip to Mexico City. And so even today, without the final trove of documents that Trump decided to hold back after saying he would release them, we don't know the full story.
Yeah. And we don't know. A lot of it wasn't written down, you know, so who knows what's in those documents anyway.
Yeah, right. And I also consider the 9/11 cover-up to be generally successful. There are many of us who are skeptical, many of us who saw the work of the 9/11 Commission and consider it the same kind of whitewash and cover-up that we got from the Warren Commission.
Yeah, I agree. It's really tragic. And the more you dig into it, and the more, at least the Kennedy assassination, which I'm more familiar with now, the more you dig into it, the more tragic it seems, because we know so much, and it's just not reaching people.
Yeah,
it's all in books, and it's hard to get people to read books, and that's one of the reasons why I made this record, is because maybe it'll get people interested in reading, you know, reading about it, because if you watch a movie about it, it's going to be full of propaganda. They're going to blame him for Vietnam. They're not going to tell the truth that he was going to pull the troops out of Vietnam. And that's a fact.
Right. Yeah. And also, because Kennedy had this prior record, he entered office as a Cold War hawk. He reluctantly approved the Bay of Pigs invasion. And then clearly, I think that was one of his teachable moments, where he turned on the intelligence community and the Pentagon and started to question the counsel they were giving him about France's war in Vietnam.
Right. Yeah, I think you're absolutely right.
So let's talk a little bit about the production here, because it's fascinating. You have a group of people. We heard the voices of JFK and his wife, Jackie. Terry Jane plays Jackie, and Christopher John is your JFK voice. Tell me a little bit about what it took to create the dialogue that they deliver in between the songs on this CD collection.
Well, a lot of it comes from books. That particular one you played comes from, it's actually from JFK and the Unspeakable. And I think I heard it, I mean, I read the book, but I copied it down from one of James Douglas's talks where he's reading. So I'm pretty sure it's in the book, word for word, pretty much.
And I have to tell you that I was 10 when the assassination occurred, and we were glued to the black and white TV set. The assassination was on a Friday afternoon, and we watched most of the weekend. And, you know, we didn't have DVRs or VCRs or any way to record a live television broadcast at the time. And for whatever reason, I happened to be in the room when they had the perp walk with Lee Harvey Oswald, and Jack Ruby, the strip bar owner, came up and shot him in cold blood. And that is the image that I can never forget. Certainly, I've seen the Zapruder film. I've seen many of the images of the funeral. But the killing of the lead suspect, despite what we know now about the likelihood of more than one shooter and the evidence that supports that, this was such a chilling moment. And to see it on live TV, like I say, really left an indelible impression, John.
I can only imagine. I mean, I feel terrible for his family, you know, who had to, you know, his kids who had to grow up thinking that he did it, that maybe he did it, or just hearing everybody say that he did it, and the likelihood is that he didn't.
Mm-hmm. So, John, I recommend your new CD to my listeners, and you have generously donated a number of these CDs, and I'm going to give them away as bonus gifts to people who take out a new $50 annual subscription to the Peter B. Collins podcast. And I want to thank you for enabling this promotional opportunity. And we're celebrating 9 years of podcasting this week, John. And I've built an audience all over the world. I just heard from Mateus in Lisbon, Portugal recently. And it's really rewarding to have been able to build an audience here without a gatekeeper. I don't have a program director who tells me what I can and can't talk about. And so it's a real liberating experience for me. But I rely on listeners for the limited stream of revenue that supports this podcast. So I want to encourage people to engage in a win-win process here. Take out a new annual subscription to the Peter B. Collins podcast. All you have to do is go to peterbcollins.com/signup, and you'll be right there on the sign-up page. And if you take out a new annual subscription and give me a mailing address in the continental U.S., I will send a copy of John Dist's American University CD to you. And, John, I really appreciate your generosity in supporting this effort.
Well, I love your show. You know, I was listening yesterday, and just when the music comes on and you start talking, I instantly start smiling, even though so much of it is dire news, you know.
Well, I'm really glad to hear that reaction, because I imagine a lot of people aren't smiling when they hear me talk about the real world we live in today. So I'm glad to hear about that. Let's listen to a little bit of the title track. This is American University by John Dist. Thanks for being with me today, John.
Thank you, Peter.
And so the die is cast.
Thanks for listening to today's news and comment podcast. Feel free to share it far and wide. You'll find it on YouTube. I'm Peter B. Collins.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling.